Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Colts, Hidden Killers Investigates. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In 1996, the Institute in Basic Life Principles, the IBLP, sent a newsletter to families enrolled in its programs. The newsletter came from the organization's medical advisory arm, the Medical Training Institute of America. I'm laughing because it's anything but. It contained a claim that Christian midwives had made a discovery. According to the newsletter, the presence of Cabbage Patch dolls and troll dolls in homes could cause a mother to have a difficult delivery. Oh, what a discovery. I know it sounds insane. Here's a secret. It is. It's utterly insane. Coming from a group that has the word medical in their title, as if a Cabbage Patch doll or a troll doll in 1988 might make it a little difficult to have that kid. As the solution, according to the official medical guidance, this is official medical guidance from the National Christian Organization, it was not to consult a doctor. It was to destroy the toys, not throw them away. Destroy them. Because once the dolls were gone, the delivery reportedly sped up. You're not going to be in labor for half a day or a day. No, no, no. Get that troll doll gone. Get that Cabbage Patch charred up out in the burn barrel. And your eighth kid that your husband has now just so gleefully given to you, that's going to work out well. Thank God you burned the Cabbage Patch doll. And these people are raising children. I know. It sounds like abuse because it really, it kind of is, in my opinion. A national organization with millions of followers and tens of millions of dollars in revenue told members in writing through its official medical channel that a stuffed doll made by a toy company was interfering with childbirth. And the prescribed treatment was burning it. I'd love to get a copy of that and just put it on the wall, frame it. I would just chuckle every time I walk by it, like, you fucking idiots. The newsletter didn't come out of nowhere. It was the product of a decade-long campaign against the toys and part of a much larger system of pseudoscience, fabricated medicine, and spiritual superstition that was presented to families as health guidance. The wisdom booklets and their companion health publications didn't just get the science wrong. They replaced science entirely and taught children that the replacements were God's truth. Welcome to part two of our five-part series on the wisdom booklets, the actual curriculum of the IBLP. In part one, we broke down what the booklets were and how they functioned as a child's entire education. Now we're going to actually go into what they taught about the physical world, the science and the medicine, and the health claims that had no business being in any curriculum anywhere. And I'm going to guess if you were one of the children who were failed so spectacularly by your brainwashed cult, member parents who peddled this shit into your brain, you will probably learn more in the next 15 minutes of this video than you learned in your entire childhood using this curriculum, in my opinion. The Medical Training Institute of America. Sounds official, doesn't it? MTIA. Operated as the health advisory arm of the IBLP. It issued pamphlets called Basic Care Bulletins, which were formatted like the wisdom booklets, but focused on physical health. According to critics who reviewed the material and former members who received it, The bulletins were heavy on spiritual advice and contained virtually no actual medical information. The very first bulletin reportedly included a suggestion that parents should be allowed to speak with former patients of their doctor who had similar conditions. Setting aside that, I mean, think about this for a second. Setting aside that this would almost certainly violate patient privacy laws in any licensed medical practice, the suggestion reveals the fundamental problem here. Nobody at IBLP was operating with any medical training. They were offering medical guidance to thousands of families without a single licensed physician producing the content. The first bulletin also reportedly recommended that doctors use prior x-rays rather than taking new ones to avoid unnecessary radiation exposure, which sounds reasonable until you consider that a patient's medical condition may have changed significantly since those earlier images were taken. Using old x-rays to diagnose a current problem isn't caution. It's actually malpractice by any recognized medical standard. But inside IBLP, it was presented as wisdom. That's what I'm learning about with the IBLP. They use words incorrectly. They assign meaning to specific words that have a very different meaning in the secular world than what they do in the IBLP. And it's usually like polar opposites. But people within seem to take the negative and as a positive. It's really a cult, in my opinion. It's how cults operate. They convince you right in plain sight that your thinking is wrong and theirs is right. How could you possibly think otherwise? And if they do it long enough, and with enough of them doing it, you can convince people of a lot of things, especially if they're fearful. Then there was the constipation fixation. I know. You're like, what? Constipation fixation? What the hell is this? One of the more unusual features of the MTIA bulletins was Gothard's heavy emphasis on constipation as both a spiritual concern and a physical one. The fixation was notable enough that at least one critic publicly asked whether God's judgment could really be thwarted by a regular helping of shredded wheat. It would almost be funny if these bulletins weren't being treated as authoritative medical counsel by families who had been told to distrust real doctors, or as they called it, the secular medical establishment. But the Cabbage Patch Doll saga is where the absurdity reached a scale that is hard to overstate. The campaign started during Gothic's basic seminars in 1989. This IBLP almost feels like the inspiration for The Onion, doesn't it? The fake news publication, because it's so absurd. He reportedly told audiences that the dolls violated the First Commandment because when children received them, they signed a small adoption certificate promising to love and care for the doll. In God's interpretation, this was a covenant, a spiritual contract that placed the doll in a position of authority that belonged only to God. The solution was not to stop signing the Cabbage Patch Doll certificates. Do you remember those? I never had a Cabbage Patch Doll, but I remember some friends that did. I think it was like the birth certificate. I think they get one like Build-A-Bear. I think we got one when I got my daughter a Build-A-Bear years ago. So that sort of thing, the little certificate where the kid very cutely signs their name. This is my doll. This is my stuffed animal.
This is a covenant, a spiritual contract.
That placed the doll in a position of authority that belonged only to God, according to Gothard. The solution, again, not to stop signing the certificates, it was not to simply donate the dolls to someone else who had different beliefs. No, they had to be burned.
Burn the Cabbage Patch dolls.
Gothard reportedly shared stories of families who witnessed dramatic behavioral changes in their children after the dolls entered the home, kids acting out, kids becoming disobedient, and these same children reportedly returning to normal behavior the moment the dolls were
destroyed. Down in the fiery pits of the barrel behind the garage.
It was spiritual cause and effect, presented as observable science. And then 10 years later, the claims escalated from behavioral problems to obstetric complications. A toy for children was now allegedly affecting the physical process of birth. The music teachings followed the same pattern of escalation without evidence. IBLP published material asserting that any music with a backbeat was spiritually dangerous. Oh, there's the devil again. The organization reportedly distributed a publication that described rock music as more addictive than crack. Not similar to crack, more addictive than crack. And this prohibition didn't just apply to mainstream popular music. Contemporary Christian music also included, I'm okay with that. To me, it's like nails on a chalkboard. I'm not against anybody who's Christian or anybody who likes Christian rock. I just happen to loathe it. I just can't stand it. It's like, that would be hell to me. Locked into a room, watching Standard Definition Golf Channel all day while listening to Christian rock. That is my hell. You're like, what does hell mean to you? That's it. It just for me, standard, like, I like high definition golf. I don't watch it, but it's pretty. Standard def when it was on TV, not good. It's like, what are we watching here? It's very boring. And then, oh, please, Jesus, that shit. Mm-mm. Again, it's just not my jam. If that's how you got your relationship with your creator, cool. I'm not here to judge you. I'm just saying it doesn't do anything for me. So, contemporary Christian music. Worse than crack. Crack is whack, as Whitney taught us. Worship music with drums. That's your suspect number one. Is there a drum in it? Ah! Beelzebub. The standard wasn't lyrical content or artistic intent. It was the beat. It was the downbeat. The rhythm was demonic. If your foot was tapping, the devil had a foothold. For children growing up inside this system, the music ban created a wall between them and the rest of the world that went far beyond taste. Music is how teenagers connect with their peers. It's how they process emotions, from identities and signal belonging. IBLP children couldn't participate in any of that. They couldn't listen to what their non-ATI peers listened to. They couldn't attend concerts. They couldn't play instruments in styles the organization hadn't approved. The ban didn't just restrict their entertainment. It severed one of the primary social bridges that might have connected them to a world outside the system. And like every other restriction, it was presented not as a preference, but as a spiritual safety measure. Violating it didn't just mean breaking a household rule. It meant inviting demonic influence into your home. That framing made the ban almost impossible to question, even for parents who might have privately found it a bit excessive. These teachings, the doll burnings, the music bans, the constipation theology are easy to mock. They sound absurd because they are absurd.
But they were also symptoms of something much more dangerous, a system that trained families to accept claims about the physical world without evidence, without expertise, and without the permission to question. And the teachings that did the most damage weren't the silly ones. They were the ones that sounded almost reasonable if you didn't look too closely. IBLP taught that mental illness does not exist. Depression was not a medical condition. Anxiety was not a diagnosable disorder. According to them, they were spiritual failures, character defects, evidence that you had stepped outside of God's protection or failed to fully submit to his authority. For families living inside this system, that teaching had devastating real-world consequences. Children experiencing genuine psychological distress had no language for what was happening to them. Adults suffering from clinical depression were told to pray harder, repent more thoroughly, and examine what hidden sin might be causing their suffering. Seeking professional help from a licensed therapist or psychiatrist wasn't just unnecessary in their framework. It was a sign of spiritual weakness. It meant you were looking outside God's system for answers that could only be found inside it. Consider what that looks like in practice. A teenager inside this system starts having panic attacks. Her heart races. She can't breathe. She feels like she's dying. In any other context, a parent would take her to a doctor who would explain what anxiety is, possibly recommend therapy, possibly prescribe medication. Inside the IBLP system, that teenager is told she has a spiritual problem. Her anxiety is a result of
unconfessed sin, unresolved bitterness, or failure to fully yield her rights to God.
The treatment isn't a doctor, it's repentance. And when repentance doesn't make the panic attack stop, because it can't, because panic attacks are a neurological event, not a spiritual one, the conclusion isn't that the diagnosis is wrong, it's that she hasn't repented enough. The failure loops back onto her every time. Some of these children grew up believing for years, for decades, some still do as grown-ass adults, that their suffering was their own fault, that they were broken in a way that obedience should fix. And when obedience didn't fix it, they broke further. The adoption teachings were equally damaging, though in a different way. I know, but wait, there's more. How can we damage people even more than we already have? Well, guess what? The IBLP has a way, in my opinion. IBLP reportedly taught that adopted children inherit the sins of their biological parents, not as a metaphor, not as a caution about genetics, as a spiritual reality. An adopted child, according to these teachers, carries the sin of their lineage into their new family. And the adoptive family was reportedly instructed to investigate the specific sins of the biological parents so they could prepare for those sins to manifest in the child. The organization reportedly taught that adoption itself was not supported by the law of God, that the modern concept of adoption was unknown to the biblical framework. So what the fuck do you do if your parents die? There's no biblical framework for that. It must be of the devil. Some teachings went further, suggesting that couples who cannot have biological children should not adopt, because God's plan apparently doesn't include giving them children at all. For adopted children growing up inside IBLP families, the message was unmistakable. You're spiritually contaminated. You brought something dangerous into this home, kind of icky, kind of meh. And everyone around you has been told to watch for it. Not surprising, S education was entirely absent from the curriculum. They could have used a little more WAP and a little less workbook. The organization's stated position was that S education belonged exclusively in the hands of parents. But within the IBLP system, the subject was functionally taboo at every level. Nobody was teaching it. Not the booklets, not the conferences, and also not the parents, who had been conditioned to view the topic as too dangerous to discuss.
The same organization that was willing to tell families what music to listen to, what toys to destroy, and what medical advice to follow, drew the line in giving children the information they would need to understand and protect their own bodies. That silence wasn't an oversight, it was a choice. And the consequences of that choice are the story the survivors of the system are still telling. Cothard also reportedly taught that circumcision remained a spiritual and physical requirement for purity, framing a surgical procedure as a medical necessity based on Old Testament law. He argued that dietary restrictions from Leviticus were still beneficial for physical health, not just spiritual obedience. These weren't presented as theological options open to discussion. They were presented as medical guidance from an organization that never employed a licensed physician in its health advisory division. From a man who never attended medical school, never practiced medicine, and never submitted any of his health claims to peer review or scientific scrutiny of any kind. The Medical Training Institute of America was eventually discontinued, reportedly after a 2002 book, critical of IBLP, exposed the extent of its practices. The pamphlets stopped printing, the basic care bulletins aren't sold through the organization's website anymore, but beliefs don't disappear when the pamphlets do. There are adults walking around right now who spent years believing their depression was a character defect. There are adopted children who grew up being told they carried inherited spiritual contamination that their families needed to monitor and manage. There are people who didn't understand their own bodies until they were well into adulthood because the organization that controlled every other detail of their lives decided that basic biology was too dangerous to teach. The wisdom booklets and the care bulletins didn't just get the science wrong. They made sure the people who studied them would never have the tools to realize how wrong it was. They replaced science with superstition, called it God's curriculum, and dared anyone to question it. And the organization that created all this, that burned dolls, banned rhythms, denied mental illness, stigmatized adoption, withheld S education, prescribed circumcision, and issued medical guidance without a single licensed physician on staff, is still operating. The Medical Training Institute of America is gone. The basic care bulletins are out of print, but the wisdom booklets themselves, they're still for sale. The science inside them has not been corrected. The health claims have not been retracted. The curriculum that taught a generation of children to distrust doctors, fear their own minds, and accept superstition as medicine is still available for purchase on the IBLP website, should you care to. Right now, anyone who wants to teach it to their kids, please don't. In part three, we're going to go into what these booklets taught girls and women about their bodies, their guilt, and their science, and why the framework that was built into the curriculum looks a lot like a manual for something far worse than bad education. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. That is coming up next. I know as we dive deeper into the IBLP workbooks, they're far worse than even I thought. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. Cults, Hidden Killers investigates. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any creepier, weirder, depraved, evil, I think that sums up a lot of the IBLP, in my opinion, and those who practice it. Here's some of their shit. If a woman does not cry out when she is attacked, God holds her equally guilty with her attacker. That is not my interpretation. That is not a paraphrase. That is, according to former students and the watchdog organization Recovering Grace, the direct teaching of wisdom booklet number 36, written by Bill Gothard and distributed as curriculum to thousands of families through the Institute in Basic Life Principles. It was not buried in a footnote. It was not an aside in a supplemental pamphlet that nobody read. It was printed in a booklet that children as young as 5 studied alongside young adults in their 20s at kitchen tables and in living rooms across the country for decades. A 5-year-old girl sat in front of this material. She couldn't fully read it yet, but the framework was already being installed. If something happens to you, the first question isn't what happened, it's what did you do wrong? And if that's what you're teaching your children, you're abusing them. You are. In my opinion. I don't see any other way around that. You shouldn't have children if that's what you're teaching your children. Someone should seriously be looking into you if that's what you believe. You probably belong behind bars if that's what you believe, in my opinion. Because God knows what else you believe. And more importantly, what else you're practicing behind closed doors, under blankets. Doors that lock from the wrong side. That teaching didn't appear in a vacuum. By the time a child reached wisdom booklet number 36, which, by the way, you do not get a free personal pan pizza by the time you reach it. I know, it ain't book it. She had already been shaped by dozens of earlier lessons that laid the groundwork for exactly this conclusion. The modesty and S framework inside the wisdom booklets was not a single lesson. It was a system layered across multiple booklets, multiple years, multiple stages of a girl's development that taught her piece by piece that male desire was her responsibility to manage and that her body was a problem to be solved. This is part 3 of our 5-part series on the wisdom booklets of IBLP. In parts 1 and 2, we covered what these pamphlets were and the pseudoscience that passed off as education. Now we're going into the part that's hardest to talk about and the part that actually matters most. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we go through this. If you survived this cult, in my opinion, please give us your experiences in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Other people, other survivors are watching this right now, and they're looking for other folks who may be in the same lifeboat that have sailed away from the Titanic that is the IBLP and the Duggars and everybody who practiced this bullshit. Looking for community, looking for hope, looking for others to say, yeah, we see it too. This is insane. Because it is. Wisdom booklet 15 is where the concept of eye traps, as Michelle Duggar would say, was introduced. And excuse me while I use the Michelle Duggar voice quite a bit in this piece. I know, everybody's excited. I've seen the comments. Great Michelle Duggar voice. Trust me, when I was a little boy, I someday dreamed of doing a video podcast where I could imitate Michelle Duggar. It was on my bucket list. Here I am. Dreams. The booklet was built around the verse, "Ye are the light of the world," from Matthew 5:14. At first glance, you might wonder what the light of the world has to do with the women's clothing. And you'd be right to wonder, because the connection only makes sense inside of the IBLP and Gothard's logic. Being a light in this framework meant presenting yourself in a way that drew attention only to your face, your countenance, as the curriculum called it. Your countenance. An eye trap was anything about your appearance that pulled someone's gaze away from your face. A pattern or a shirt? A hemline that fell the wrong way? A color that drew attention to a part of the body that should, according to the booklet, remain invisible. The booklet included illustrations of women in conservative outfits and quiz students on identifying which ones contained eye traps. Former students have noted that even by conservative Christian standards, the women pictured looked remarkably modest. But the curriculum wasn't interested in whether anyone actually looked immodest by any common standard. It was training children, girls especially, to find fault, to analyze every element of their appearance through the lens of whether it might cause a man to look where he shouldn't. The underlying logic came from Matthew 5:28, that a man who looks at a woman with lust has committed adultery in his heart. The wisdom booklets took that verse and did something very specific with it. They kept the sin, but they shifted the blame, which narcissists do. The man was lusting, but the woman was the cause. If he looked, she failed. Her clothing, her posture, her appearance. Those were the variables in the equation. His self-control, nah, nothing to look at there. He's the umbrella. He's the umbrella holder. How could you criticize the umbrella holder? He's always walking around. He's shielding you. You don't question the umbrella holder in the IBLP. Wisdom Booklet 24 went further, using Leviticus 18 and Proverbs 7 and Deuteronomy 22. The booklet argued that modesty requirements began inside the home. Family members exposing skin to one another, even inadvertently, reportedly opened doors to spiritual and physical danger. And, well judging by the Duggar household, it's not a lot that's off limits there. Now is there, Josh? The booklet framed female appearance as the primary vector of S sin and used Old Testament law to build a system in which a woman's body was always the source of the problem. One former student described his parents pulling him out of a recreational soccer league at 16. The reason wasn't his grades. It wasn't his behavior. The team included girls. And the teachings of the Wisdom Booklet 24, again, he did not earn a personal pan pizza despite getting to Wisdom Booklet 24. Reason number 500 why Book It was better, made the presence of girls in athletic clothing an unacceptable spiritual risk. What's worth understanding is the cumulative weight of this teaching on a girl growing up inside of it. By the time she was old enough to notice her own body changing, she had already internalized the idea that her body was a spiritual hazard. She had already studied eye trap quizzes. She had already learned that if a man's eyes wandered, the fault was hers. Every outfit she chose, every way she moved, every physical development she couldn't control was evaluated through a framework that made her the custodian of every man's purity. And she was doing all of this at the age when most girls are just trying to figure out who they are. She didn't get to figure out who she was. She got to figure out how invisible she could make herself. And even that was never enough. Again, that's why the IBLP, that's why the Duggars, that's why anybody who subscribes to this bullshit is a cult. And in my opinion, abusive as shit. That even that was never enough. The women in the eye trap illustrations were already invisible by most standards, and the curriculum still found fault. Then the victim blaming became explicit. Gothard's character sketches, the material, companion resources used alongside the wisdom booklets, reportedly took the biblical stories of Dinah and Tamar, two women who were victimized, and rewrote them. Not the way you'd expect a curriculum to handle those stories, with compassion, with context, with an emphasis on the wrongness of what was done to them. The stories are reframed to make the victims the cautionary tales. Dinah's assault was attributed to what the material called her uncontrolled initiative. She'd gone out. She'd placed herself in a situation. The lesson wasn't about the man who attacked her. It was about the failure to stay under protection. Tamar's assault was turned into a lesson about whether a victim cries out loudly enough. Scripture placed no blame on either of those women. Gothard's material placed almost all of the blame on them. You see how they bastardized the Bible? Yeah. I believe it speaks directly in the Bible about doing that. I believe it refers to that sort of, practice as evil. And then there was the counseling SA document, another IBLP dandy or resource, separate from the wisdom booklets, but part of the same ecosystem. According to the analysis published by Recovering Grace, this document reportedly opened the default assumption that a victim of SA was likely at least partially responsible for what happened to them. At least partially, according to them. One section reportedly presented a victim with a binary choice. View your abuse as meaningless suffering or choose to see it as a spiritual gateway to becoming mighty in spirit. That's not a counseling framework. That's a coercion framework. It tells a victim that the only spiritually acceptable response to being violated is to reframe the violation as a gift. Another section reportedly described a woman who was assaulted and framed the assault itself as a kind of spiritual inoculation against future lust, as if the trauma served a divine medical purpose. The document reportedly carried the default assumption that the victim bore guilt until innocence could be specifically established. Guiltless victims were treated as the exception, not the rule. This is why it is so important to call religions like this out. This is why it is so important not just look at these folks on TV, the Duggars, and go, oh, aren't they cute? Aren't they modest? Yeah, they're a little more strict than we are. Mm-mm. This is the shit that's going on. Everybody looks away. Everybody takes what they want. Oh, is that cute? Look at all these kids. It's lovely. Great. Okay. Turn the channel. Move on to the next thing. This is what's going on in these households. This is what's being taught to these people. Are you okay with it? I'm not. Are you okay living with folks like this around you with these sort of beliefs? Children brainwashed from birth to believe this shit and then try to carry it out into the real world and spread this madness to others? I'm not. It should be called out. It should be publicly shamed. It should be said, this is not acceptable in a civilized society. It's far easier just to walk away, cover your ears, la, 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 it's not my problem, it's not my belief, that's theirs, I can do with it. What? Yeah. Until you consider the thousands of small children that get indoctrinated into this shit and then spend the rest of their lives trying to mentally escape it. When if there's enough shame, enough calling this shit out, enough adults on the planet in this country saying, yeah, that's not okay. That's not a way we're good with anybody raising children. This shit just keeps going. And it should never be accepted, in my opinion. None of this. This is insane. This is abuse in its truest, purest, most blatant form, dressed up as religion. And it doesn't discount your religion or your relationship with God or how whatever you have going on. That's not this, unless it is this. If this is your religion, you're evil, in my opinion. Pure and simple. You're fucking evil. If this is what you're following, in my opinion. This is a guidebook to depraved evil behavior. It is a bastardization of the Bible. In my opinion. And it needs to be exposed. And that's why we're doing this. The control extended into the most immediate or intimate details of a woman's body. A former IBLP member described being a young woman working in an IBLP facility when staff searched her personal belongings and found a box of tampons. Oh my God. imagine, in a woman's purse. She was reportedly told that tampons, like only Bill Gothard could, were a form of pleasure. She was locked in her room. She was told she had taken her own virginity and robbed her future husband of the right to, yeah. A hygiene product was reframed as an S act, and a young woman was punished for it, allegedly. The message was total. Your body's not yours. Your choices about your body are not yours. Even the most basic private decision about how you care for yourself are subject to the authority of people who believe they have a divine right to control you. Step back and look at the full architecture of what was constructed here. By the time a girl inside the system reached adolescence, she'd been taught that her body was a spiritual hazard that could cause men to sin. She'd been taught that male desire was her responsibility to manage. She'd been taught that victims of assault bear guilt if they don't resist loudly enough. She'd been taught that even the most private decisions about her own hygiene were subject to the authority of others. She'd studied biblical stories in which victimized women were held up as cautionary examples of what happens when you step out of line. And she'd been taught from the very foundation of the system that stepping out from under the authority, the umbrella, invites harm. Every one of these teachings pointed in the same direction. If something happens to you, it's your fault. If you don't prevent it, you're complicit. If you speak up, you're the one disrupting the order. The system didn't just fail to protect girls and women. It pre-built their silence. Layer upon layer, Jerry. Layers. Booklet by booklet. Year after year. Before anything had even happened to them yet. All of these teachings, the eye traps, the modesty quizzes, the victim-blaming doctrine, the rewritten biblical stories, the counseling framework that assumed guilt, the tampon confiscation, existed inside the same system that produced, employed, and protected Bill effing Gothard. And Bill effing Gothard was accused of harassing more than 30 women. Many of them were young women who had been specifically recruited to work at IBLP headquarters, the same building where the wisdom booklets were written and produced. According to survivors, he would notice them at conferences. Ooh, those eyes aren't keeping to yourself, Bill, but according to the IBLP, it ain't your fault. Tell them they had a bright countenance. Invite them to work for him and then isolate them from their peers once they arrived. Multiple survivors and critics have drawn a direct line between the teachings and the booklets and the alleged behavior of the man who wrote them. The women he allegedly targeted had been trained since childhood in a framework that told them male attention was their fault. They'd been taught that stepping out from under authority invited spiritual danger, and they'd studied wisdom booklet number 36, didn't get a frickin' pan pizza, and absorbed the message that a woman's failure to cry out makes her complicit in her own violation. They'd been counseled, if they ever came forward, through a framework that assumed they bore guilt. According to survivors and advocates, the curriculum wasn't just bad theology, it was functionally, a grooming manual. It didn't just fail to protect women. It pre-built the silence that would keep them from reporting what happened. Gothard, by the way, resigned from IBLP in 2014 after the allegations became public. The board investigated and concluded that he had not acted criminally, but had acted inappropriately. Notice there's a fine line between what they call criminal and inappropriate in the IBLP. As long as the authorities don't get involved and really look closely and go, oh, that's what you're calling inappropriate is truly criminal. But if they keep it under the umbrella, away from the cops, well, then that's just a moral failing now, isn't it? He was permanently barred from any counseling, leadership, or board role within the organization. He's not been involved with the IBLP since. But the wisdom booklets he wrote,
including booklet 15 with the eye trap quizzes, booklet 24 with its modesty framework, booklet 36 with its doctrine that God holds silent victims equally guilty, are still for sale on the organization's website. The author has been removed. The authorship is not. Five women filed a lawsuit against the organization and its board of directors, alleging that IBLP enabled and covered up abuse and harassment of interns, employees, and participants in its programs, the organization that had taught women for decades that they bore responsibility for what happened to them was now facing women who had made the bold decision that the responsibility truly belongs somewhere else entirely. The legal process is its own story, but the fact that it exists at all is a testament to what it takes to break free from a framework designed to prevent exactly this kind of resistance. These women were taught from childhood that speaking up was rebellion. They spoke up anyway. And the women who were raised on these booklets are still doing the work of unlearning what they were taught to believe about themselves. That if something happened to them, they should examine their own guilt first, that their bodies were problems, that their silence was consent, that the man who wrote the rules was also the one the rules were designed to protect. In part four, we're going to go into how the wisdom booklets rewrote history and government, and how they taught an entire generation that questioning authority isn't just wrong, it's the reason civilizations collapse. Your thoughts, your stories, your experiences, maybe of survival. We'd love to hear them in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it there. Be sure to press subscribe. I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.